Are you a designer, a product manager, or anybody working in the product innovation sort of, you know, designy, innovation-y space? Well, I'm kind of cheating here because if you're listening to this podcast, then you probably are in that space. Well, if you're in this space and you're looking to kind of up your game and get ahead in your career, one of the best ways to do this is by being able to run lots of different types of workshops, whether that be strategy workshops, design thinking workshops, brainstorming workshops, all of the above. Having a toolkit of workshops that you can run is a kick-ass way of boosting your career. Thankfully, myself and Jake, the other co-host of the show, put together a 1.5-hour free training called How to Run and Sell Design Sprints Like a Pro. Now, obviously, this is specifically talking about design sprints, but what we're going to be talking about as well kind of applies to almost any type of workshop because you can break down the design sprint exercises into many, 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 many types of workshops like we do at AJ and Smart. If you want to watch this, it's a limited replay. Just go to ajsmart.com/free-training and you can set yourself up. You can choose a time and that limited replay is running. I guess it's a few days after this episode airs, but I don't exactly know how long we're going to keep it on. But it's a 1.5-hour session, mostly going to be me. And then at the end, a really big Q&A with Jake Knapp. But if you want to check it out, if you're interested in running your own workshops, check out ajsmart.com/webclass. Let's get into the episode. Hey everybody, how's it going? Jonathan here, and I'm alone tonight. I'm alone, and I also have a new headset, so I can hear my voice better. So maybe that allows my voice to sound deeper. Now I know why all these kind of radio presenters have such sexy, sexy voices. Because they can hear their own fucking voice, and I couldn't for the last 81 episodes. Now I can. Although I have to say I've got this very small little mic stand. So I'm kind of huddled over my mic. Now, it's about 15 minutes after WWDC and keynote ended. I'm sure I don't need to tell anybody listening to this podcast what WWDC is. But, you know, just in case some random person has wandered in, it is one of the biggest Apple events of the year, one of the biggest keynotes of the year, but it's usually very software focused. It's the Worldwide Developer Conference, Developers Conference. And yeah, it was a really interesting one tonight. What I'm going to do in this episode, which is kind of uncharacteristic for the Product Breakfast Club, which is usually a major, major ramble fest between myself and my usual co-host, Jake Knapp. Jake is right now on a workshop. He's traveling. As I mentioned, the last few episodes, we're going to be traveling a lot. And the episodes are going to be kind of, there's going to be a couple of disturbances. But I'm taking over tonight. Actually, you know, usually this releases on a Monday morning. So I'm taking over this morning. And I'm going to give you a nice rundown of what happened in tonight's WWDC. I'm sure you've read the news stories already if you've, because it's a week later. But that's why I'm also going to be giving my opinion, because you didn't read those in the news stories. And what's also interesting is I haven't read any news stories yet, because there aren't really any news stories yet when this is going out. So I'm going to be giving you my unfiltered opinion. And I'm sure, you know, everyone will be complaining about Apple anyway later. But let me just give you my nice, happy opinion at this point, you know, 15 minutes after WWDC. And I'm just going to go through it in chronological order. I've got like 8 pages of information in front of me. It was a big event tonight, and I felt like it was one of the most satisfying WWDCs in a while. I mean, I really enjoy watching these Apple events. Sometimes they're terrible, and sometimes they're really, really inspiring and interesting, and I like tonight. Now, let me go through it little step by little step. The event kicked off with tvOS, so looking at Apple TV. It has a new UI, which I find quite cute and quite chunky. I really think that chunky is almost like the theme of tonight's show. A lot of the new UI elements that I saw tonight were just nice and chunky, very clear, not flat design, not like properly skeuomorphic or anything, but they have a lot of drop shadows, a lot of gradients, And it just looks super clear and clean. That's what I like about it as well. It's not like dirty shadows like I've seen on like some past Apple events when they're releasing their new UIs and it's just like, looks dirty. These were some nice, clean, chunky pieces of UI. So tvOS looks nice. Nothing really to remark about it besides that I think the interface looks a little bit cleaner. And my favorite part of that announcement was that there's now support for both Xbox One and PS4 controllers. Though, since, you know, tvOS doesn't really have amazing games yet, that doesn't really matter. But eventually, that could be a big deal. But again, Apple, I think the theme of a lot of Apple's events is that slow and steady wins the race. People are kind of always underwhelmed by Apple because they, you know, you can't really tell what they're doing. When you really zoom out and look back over the last few years, it kind of makes sense, you know, in the big picture, but in the day-to-day or event-to-event, it can often feel like almost nothing is happening. And that can be really disappointing to people. But from a strategic perspective, Apple usually gets it right when it very slowly builds upon some of their platforms. And I think Apple TV and tvOS are slowly starting to get there right now. But yeah, nothing like super, super exciting, but it is one of the most well put together and stable tvOSs that are out there. And there's also not so many amazing competitors. And I guess watchOS, I'll just go straight into that. That was the next thing. It has a similar story. So slow and steady wins the race. The watch didn't have a great start a couple of years ago. But now, is there any other smartwatch that actually matters? The answer is no. There's no point in debating it. The answer is definitely no. And I'm sure a couple of people here listening will be kind of like, what? But it's not... No. Is there any other watch that like gets updated regularly and keeps getting new features added to it, keeps improving? Not really. And I think Apple Watch is, I'm assuming, the best-selling smartwatch on the market. Again, some new faces, some new watch faces, very chunky. Apple's going all in on the chunk this year. Taptic chimes, I don't know, like it gives you a little tap on the arm when the hour comes along and makes a noise if you want. More apps on the watch. I think, you know, voice memo and calculator were announced and people freaked the fuck out. I have no idea why. Independent apps, this is interesting. Both independent apps and streaming audio API were interesting for me because one of the reasons Apple Watch is interesting to me and that doesn't work very well right now is actually listening to podcasts, you know, listening to or being able to stream podcasts from products like Overcast, which is my podcast app. And right now, podcasts and Apple Watches, it's like this really complicated, shitty process. And you can't just like find the podcast you want to listen to unless you've downloaded it. Yeah. So streaming audio API sounds like a really great way of solving that. And it's just, you know, slow and steady rolling these things out. There's also, I think the biggest announcement was the Apple Watch App Store. There's now going to be an App Store on your watch so you can actually download the apps on the watch. And I think it's great that they figured out that interface challenge. It's not easy to design like an entire platform on a screen that size. So I got to take I'm not wearing a hat, but I got to take my hat off to Apple for the Apple Watch. So patient, so slow, and really, really nailing it there. But you have to wonder, I'm always curious when it's something like the Apple Watch, you know, why do they spend time on it? Why do they spend marketing time on it and stage time? I'm just amazed that they're sticking to it. I'm really happy about that. Now, the whole second part of it was about health, you know, on the Apple Watch. Now you have trends to see your activity trends. You can see like, you know, how you've been doing over the last 6 weeks, month, whatever. There was a big section about hearing health, you know, decibel warnings and all of that. Cycle tracking for fertility and period tracking, all of that kind of stuff. That's actually kind of great that they're putting that in there, but I do feel like they're destroying the usual thing at an Apple WWDC event is that they come along and they add features into their apps that essentially make a lot of other products completely irrelevant, which is the power of Apple, and a completely redesigned health app, which I'm going to be honest with you, I'm not super interested in that. So I'm just going to keep moving on. And right now, I'm not giving a lot of opinions. I'll get to opinions soon. So then it was off to iOS. Always great that they kicked that off with talking about the install base. And the install base of iOS 12, which is the current OS on the iPhone, is 85%. That's amazing. So 85% of the people who have iPhones right now are using the most current up-to-date version, whereas Android, which is Android 9, only 10% of the people using Android products are on the most current version. That is a scathing attack from Apple, but it does make a big difference, right? It is one of the reasons that the Apple products are so, you know, they still have that edge over Android when it comes to just being stable and up to date and kind of easy to understand. So good old Craig comes on stage, Craig Federighi. He's a kind of like a bit of a jokester in the Apple events. He gets on stage, immediately kills it, destroys it with a joke. Well, the joke is basically, you know, guess what the name of this year's OS is? And it's iOS 13. Great. So everything's faster. What I found cool was that apps open twice as fast, which is really cool. And they're 50% smaller. I don't care about that part, but that they open twice as fast, that's cool. Dark mode had an insanely dramatic intro, which is hilarious. Dark mode. I love only Apple would announce something as simple as dark mode like that. They added a couple of other things. One thing I just note is just iOS looks and feels, it's just a solid, solid product. And they're so, so slow with adding things to it. You know, a lot of people were hoping to get some more information on the home screen, some more like, you know, that the icons maybe are like widgets that update or whatever. But Apple is just like... Nah, we'll do it next year. That was supposed to be me smoking. That's actually supposed to be Apple smoking. Apple are so chilled when it comes to these things. They're not in a rush. They're patient. I'm sure, you know, just because you as a designer can come up with a cool design about how the notifications should look or how the home screen should look. And I saw a couple of cool concepts where it showed, you know, the home screen with like weather and all that kind of shit on it. One thing I really liked was seeing a concept of the home screen with the lock screen with the most common apps on there, the most used apps just for quick launch. But you know what? Apple, it's not like they don't know that that's something they could do. They just don't do these things for a reason, or it just isn't important enough for them this year. So that's getting skipped. Everything else kind of got updated. You know, Safari, Mail, Notes, I don't really care. Reminders is less of a shit show. Maps apparently works now. Well, I think the biggest thing that was announced, which kind of hidden in there, was the sign in with Apple button that can be added to apps, which kind of takes away this, or basically is an attack on the Facebook or Google login. So what Apple says is that no Facebook, no tracking. And what's really cool is that when you're signing up for apps, you can sort of make a dummy email address. Like Apple will automatically make a dummy email address if you want to hide your email address. So let's say I'm signing up for a new app like Uber or whatever. And I'm like, fuck it, I don't want those guys to send me newsletters. I can hit the hide button. And then they don't have my actual email address. They have a dummy email address that I can just destroy if I don't want to get any more marketing material. So I really appreciate that Apple is going on this hardcore privacy route, hardcore like anti-Black Mirror route. And I feel like they're uniquely positioned to be able to do that because they're one of the few large Silicon Valley firms that's not making money through advertising. So it's actually, they've got a very, very unique position and they've been on the attack for the last few years when it comes to these companies that need your data for ad revenue. So yeah. And by the way, for the record, I also benefit from Facebook ads and Google ads. So I'm happy that these advertising platforms exist. And I'm happy that, like, you know, advertising platforms have, you know, created a better internet overall. I think, for example, if Google didn't exist, I think we'd be in a worse place. However, I do like that Apple is keeping them in check and other companies are keeping them in check because I think there are creepy levels that shouldn't be crossed. And I like that that's getting kind of, I said it to someone yesterday, is like, I feel like things are actually going to get less Black Mirror-y right now. HomeKit, secure video, that was another thing. So it's instead of your videos from all of these like Nest or whatever, all of these home cameras, instead of them just being sent to the cloud unencrypted where people can watch your videos potentially, HomeKit secure video locally analyzes and does all this encrypted stuff, or encrypts the videos before they go online to the cloud so that people can't like access anything. And then there was something about HomeKit routers, but I was just confused as fuck. Then they talked about Messenger. So instead of like the little blank image, when you send, like if you open Messenger right now, iMessage, sorry. If you open iMessage right now, what you're going to see is a list of people on the left like just the overview, and nobody has a picture. Actually, in my list, only like one person has a picture in the entire list that I see here of messages, incoming messages. And in the new Messenger, apparently those images will be filled in because you can make yourself a profile image more easily. You can do that today. I don't know what the difference is, but something about the fact that that will look a bit nicer, you know, more like Facebook Messenger. There was then a cute video about Memojis, and, you know, there was these two girls, they were influencers, and they were showing how insanely powerful the Memojis are now. I still don't really care about that, but the video was nice. And also the Memojis can wear AirPods. Hey! And you can use them in other apps as stickers, and you can use it on devices that don't have Face ID now, which is nice. The camera had a bit of a big update, so new effects. The photo editing UI has been completely overhauled. It looks a bit easier to understand. It's a bit of a mess at the moment. You can now video edit, which is cool. You can edit the videos, like as in you can kind of enhance them and make them look nicer. The new Photos app, the new photo browser is lovely looking. There's like a new set of tabs on the bottom. So that's actually like the navigation tabs on the bottom. And just above those tabs, there's another set of what look like tabs, but are actually filters. So actually, just from a visual point of view, it looks interesting because it's like double tabs all down at the bottom. Not sure from a usability perspective how much sense that makes, but it seems fine. I think people know how to use apps now. Anyway, the biggest thing that's different is when you're on the Photos tab, the first tab on the bottom left, the first navigation point, you now have these filters which say all photos, days, months, and years. All is what you see right now when you click into all photos. It's just a big mess of photos. Hit on days, and it will just show you the best photos from each day. So it cleans up some of the duplicates and some of the photos that are maybe a bit more shitty. Hit the month filter. You get this nice animation. It zooms out, and you can kind of see a full overview of the month, which is kind of nice. And the best kind of image of the month. And then you can hit years. And the coolest shit here, which is what I really like, and Apple always comes up with these nice ideas. So if you hit the years tab, or sorry, filter, fuck, I don't know. You hit the years filter and you zoom all the way out to different years. And depending on what time of the year you are at right now, and the example on stage was right now it's WWDC, you see sort of the best moment from that time in the year all the way back to when you started taking pictures in your iPhone. And the guy on stage, can't remember his name, Chris or something, he showed that, and then he showed a really emotional one, which was, Apple's also very good at this, by the way. It was like his daughter growing up year over year, and it was like all the way back from when she was born to now when she's like 7 or something. It was very cute and a great illustration of how that product works. I think Apple is excellent at doing these types of product demos. Then it got less interesting for a bit. AirPods, HomePod, CarPlay, and Siri. AirPods, now when you get a message, it can immediately announce the message to you and you can reply. So like it's like ping, Dave says, give me a shoe, and then you can reply saying no, no shoe, all without having to invoke Siri. Audio sharing. This is where you can... I needed some water here. Leave this in, Jason, please. This is the real stuff. It's late. Okay, audio sharing. So the idea here is that if you're wearing AirPods and another person's wearing AirPods, you can say, hey, I'm going to share my audio to that other person's AirPods as well. So you can both watch the same video and both listen to the same music, whatever. Now, apparently it's as easy as just putting the phones close to each other, but I've tried to use fucking AirDrop for the last 3,000 years. I work in a company where we all use Apple products, and you start to see this stuff break down pretty quickly. AirDrop, please God help me. When it works, it's the best thing of all time. When it doesn't work, it's the most frustrating thing of all time, and I just don't trust it. AirDrop, you're a piece of shit. So audio sharing, I don't believe you. In the same way, the handoff to HomePod, meaning you're listening to a podcast on your way from work to home, then you arrive at home, and you just put your phone near the HomePod, and then apparently it just continues playing what you were listening to. Don't believe you, Apple. The only thing they've gotten right, like, I mean, there's a couple of things that are really magical and work every time. AirPods, love them. Setting up a new Apple Watch, amazing. That's it. Okay, so then this personalization based on voice on the HomePod. Yeah, okay, I didn't buy a HomePod. I have Sonos, so whatever. CarPlay, don't care. Siri shortcuts. Never used them once in my entire life, but now there's an app that helps you sort of understand them a little bit better. I think that's kind of cool. I don't know. Don't care though. I'm not saying I don't care. I think it's probably great, but I personally probably won't use it. And now Siri's voice sounds more natural using something called Neural TTS. Okay. Okay, now it's just something more interesting, the iPad. So they renamed, iPad was always using just like whatever the OS version is currently. So iPad would normally be using iOS 13 this year, but now iPad is using iPad OS, its very own OS, which looks very much like the normal iOS update that it gets every year, but with a couple of new things. So it does look a bit different. I mean, it's basically, I think this is more of a symbolic thing this year where Apple is saying, look, we're taking the iPad seriously. It's getting its own operating system based on iOS, but its own operating system, and it's going to like be really, really powerful. We're going to take advantage of the fact that the iPads are now so powerful. And I think also they got so much shit in the press for releasing such powerful iPads that can't really do anything. So there's some nice things. Some things I liked was when you're multitasking and you've got like a stack, when you've got a slide over, it means that you have another app kind of over the app you're working on. This is, you know, helpful if you're watching a video and you're also browsing at the same time. You can now stack those and kind of swipe between them so you can have a good amount of different apps open at the same time. They showed this demo about like notes and having multiple instances of notes open, and then it went into expose for notes. I was super confused. Don't know what happened there. How will people learn this? That's what I'm asking. I think this is all just for superpower users, and I honestly don't think any normal person buying an iPad will ever discover any of this. Now you can use thumb drives, so I'm assuming it has to be like a USB-C thumb drive, which is great though. It means you can actually stick a thumb drive into your iPad and go into the Files app and download the stuff from it onto your iPad, which is great. Direct import for cameras, finally. I'm sure every photographer is just like, finally, why the fuck didn't they do that before? It also means that you can open an app like Lightroom and import the photos and videos directly into that and not into the Files app first. The browser doesn't automatically just open mobile pages anymore. Web apps apparently work, and there's a download manager so you can download stuff from the internet. Ho ho. You can also now get custom fonts. Apparently in the App Store, they're going to integrate custom fonts and you can download fonts from the font foundries. There was also a demo of three-finger copy and paste, which didn't work that well on stage. And they've gotten the pencil latency down from 20 to 9 milliseconds and some other stuff. It was interesting. I mean, it did make me want a new iPad immediately, even though I have a relatively new one. But that's how Apple, that's how they do it. And then I think, you know, the biggest announcement of the night was very simple. It was the Mac Pro. So Apple kind of, I know everyone already knows this as well, but like Apple gave up on the whole pro market quite a while ago and went all in on mainstream. People were kind of irritated. You know, the Mac Pro was never being updated. The cinema displays were not being updated. Apple just sort of gave up on all of that. You know, Final Cut Pro turned into Final Cut 10. It was a disaster. And they basically just turned their backs on the pro market. Then a couple of years ago, they were like, hey, look at this shit. And they brought out this new Mac Pro, which was sort of this like, looked like a little trash can or a HomePod. And it was really not extendable. So people were irritated by it and were pissed and just never got updated either. So I think a lot of bad press. I think this is more of like, I really don't think this is going to really help their bottom line, but I think having Apple back in the pro market is more of an optics thing from a marketing point of view. And they went all out on it, to be honest. It's kind of cool. So they introduced a new Mac Pro at the kickoff price of $6,000. Yeah, it looks like a cheese grater. Everyone's talking about that. I don't really care. Although it does very much look like a cheese grater this time, a lot more than the last one. Super modular, super flexible. Like, it has crazy shit in it. Like, the coolest sounding thing is Infinity Fabric Link. Why didn't I come up with that name? And as a video editor, so I used to want to be a filmmaker, and I went to, my final 2 years of college were all about film, so I was editing video a lot. And one thing that really excited me here is that you can work with native video files. So they've added some hardware into the Mac Pro called the Afterburner. And this allows you to work with native video files rather than what you have to do today, usually, is transpose, like you need to change the footage into a different file format so you can actually work with it, which is kind of like a proxy format. So you're never really working with the real stuff and it slows you down. It's crazy. The coolest thing about the Mac Pro, we all know, is that it has wheels. It has wheels, optional wheels that you can use to roll around with, which is great. So you can sit on it and ride it around your studio. But what I like about it, and the next thing is also the display, the XDR display. What I like about these two objects is that they have a very un-Apple aesthetic. They've got this crazy aggressive, like, not even, I don't even know where this aesthetic is from. It just looks like pure industrial, something that you could can take a beating. It's just like this very aggressive industrial aesthetic with these like holes all over it. It looks fucking, doesn't look beautiful at all. It doesn't look elegant. It looks aggressive and ugly. But I think in a way that the pro market is going to kind of appreciate, it's this thing that looks like it could take a beating. So speaking of taking a beating, the display, which had, I don't know when the last time Apple upgraded the Thunderbolt display. I think it was around the time that Moses brought down the Ten Commandments from the bridge or whatever he did. Why did I use that example when I don't have any information on it? Long time ago. So the display is insane. Obviously, it's insane. It's so weird seeing Apple, people from Apple on stage, though, talking about like the specs of something and how powerful it is. It was just weird watching it. It was kind of exciting. People in the audience are freaking out and getting super excited. But the big, okay, so the screen is cool, right? It's like the revolutionary, world-changing. Instead of high dynamic range, they call it extreme dynamic range, which is very fun. The funny thing was, though, so they announced the price of the display at $5,000, so like probably like fucking 6,000 euro. Everyone was like, yay, whatever. And then offhand, Apple also said, like, the lady who was on stage, she was like, and by the way, sorry, I don't know anyone's names except for Craig Federici. Everyone else's name is just like, I have no idea who anyone is up there. That's why I said Chris earlier. So let's say this person was Sarah. So she says, she's like, oh yeah, and the stand is $99 or something, or maybe $199, I can't remember. And the whole audience goes like, oh. So they kind of, I don't know, they kind of ruined the whole nice moment there by saying the fucking stand for the screen doesn't come with it, which I kind of understand because a lot of video editors have their own like rack that they're going to attach these to, but still it kind of killed the vibe. So next up was macOS Catalina. That's the new name of the new Mac operating system. I think macOS is always the most boring part of it. What they did do well was, I really liked the joke from Craig Federici. He made a big joke about iTunes. He was like, customers love iTunes. And he was like, customers love that iTunes can do so much. And the audience, I think the audience didn't 100% get that it was a joke immediately. And then he was like, we're going to add calendar to iTunes. We're going to add all mail to iTunes. Then people were laughing because iTunes is just such a shit show. So yeah, as expected, but it took a while, longer than we all expected. iTunes is being split up into music, podcasts, and TV, three separate apps. Great. And a great moment was, he was like, here's what happens now when you plug in your iPhone into a Mac. Nothing happens. iTunes doesn't pop up. Finally, we're very happy about that. One cool thing that really went under the radar is that in the podcasts app, apparently you can search for just like sentences someone said or something like that, and it uses machine learning to try to find the podcast where that was talked about. That sounds insane. Another thing that they announced was called Sidecar, where you can use your iPad as a second display. I know there's a company called like AirPlay or something like that. It sounds like... Yeah, this is a very disrespectful podcast. I'm just yawning here, but it's late, man. So yeah, Sidecar is like, you know, it's just killing that company that was offering that. Voice control. I really like this section. Apple does a lot of cheesy stuff, but I sometimes, it really gets me. I'm not saying this part was cheesy. It's just that they often try to get like brownie points by saying, oh, we do all this accessibility stuff, but actually it's all about money and all about good PR. But I really like this bit. It was voice control for Mac. And it was an accessibility feature showing someone who, I guess, is paraplegic or obviously can't use his hands to type and use a mouse, completely controlling a Mac and an iPhone just using his voice. And the interface there was actually quite cool. I really like this video. I'm sure like after this, I'll be on Twitter and people will be making snarky comments about some part of it. But I really like it. It definitely got me. What's actually kind of cool as well, they introduced Find My, a new app for finding your iPhone and your whatever. And what's different from the old version is that even if your Mac is off now, it can still find it by using Bluetooth. And when other people are around, it can just like basically can find your Mac when it's off. Offline, I mean, which is really cool. So if you ever had your Mac stolen and then couldn't find it because it wasn't connected to the internet, now you can. Last thing was called Project Catalyst. I think this was called Marzipan for a while, but it's called Catalyst now. And it's basically a simple way of bringing iPad apps to the Mac. It was kind of weird. I mean, they brought Atlassian on stage. That's not the weird part, but the weird part was like Atlassian on stage talking about how their new Mac app is an iPad app moved to the Mac. I don't know. It all felt really weird, but and I have to say it didn't interest me at all. That whole concept of bringing iPad apps to the Mac. I don't know. I don't use that many native apps anymore besides like, I don't know, besides Adobe Audition for recording this. I really don't use a lot of native apps at all. And then there was the giant AR section because Apple loves AR and they're up to something. They're up to something with that AR stuff. And they showed Reality Kit, AR Kit, R Kit, A Kit, Real AR Kit. I don't know. They showed like 400 kits related to AR. But they did show some cool stuff with Minecraft. They demoed that on stage. It was very nerdy, but it was nice. Then finally, they ended everything with Swift UI, which is just basically like a cool, by the way, I'm a bit ignorant about all this programming stuff that Apple does, but it's like a cool way of, it's a more visual way of designing or programming iOS apps. And it looks super easy. And some people gave that a standing ovation because it has like real-time editing. And I guess that's hard usually. And that was it. That was the whole event. I can't believe I got through that in 35 minutes or less, like 30 minutes. So that was basically the whole event. I liked it personally. I enjoyed the whole thing. There was only a few boring bits. Usually at these Apple events, like I'm like, okay, I'm out. I don't want to watch that bit. So what I thought was, yeah, it was overall really nice. It was well-paced and I liked it. And I'm happy about what Apple announced today. And I think overall excited about Apple. Overall, very excited that they decided to do all this pro stuff. I do think there's a risk again that they'll just forget about it and this will be like the last upgrade or the last update to these pro things for another 3,000 years. I liked it. Now let's have a look at Twitter. That's why I'm kind of slowing down my speech. I'm looking at Twitter to see what people are saying about all this stuff. So Vlad Savov from The Verge, I think he's still at The Verge. Are you still at The Verge, Vlad? Yes, tech editor at The Verge. Here's a photo of the back of the Pro Display. And the back of the Pro Display has all these huge holes in it. It's really crazy. You have to see it. It's something you really haven't seen from Apple before. It's very aggressive looking. And he writes, "Dear Apple, in the real world, we have this thing called dust." So yeah, let's see if that becomes an actual problem for Apple. Everyone is making a cheese grater joke. People are saying that the Mac Pro Plus display coming in at $11,000 a year or so before switching. Oh, okay, sorry. So people are just saying it's super expensive. Mark Gurman, he's one of these guys who gets so many of the Apple rumors. He's famous for that. He said, "I need help deciding between an iPhone XS and a stand that's required to hold up the new $5,000 Apple monitor." A lot of people overall very happy about the show. Biggest WWDC in a long time. Joshua Topolsky from The Outline, ex-editor at The Verge, is laughing about the fact that there was a promo video for dark mode. I also found that funny. People are very angry at Apple's pricing. Apple's pricing is getting truly fucking pathetic, and I genuinely hope their new stuff fails hard because of it. That is someone called Scott Riley. I mean, you don't have to buy it. I don't think the prices were unreasonable that I saw today, considering these are pro products and the people who are going to be buying these things. I just don't think those prices were unreasonable personally. I'm not buying them. They're too expensive for me for what I do, but I don't, yeah. People are happy about the iPad updates, early impressions of the Mac. Yeah, okay. Wow, people are really angry at the price of the Mac Pro. Come on. Yeah, but people seem to like it. You know what was actually really interesting? And I know this is near the end of the podcast, so no one's going to hear it. I found it really interesting that the slides for the keynote were completely redesigned. They didn't look like the old Apple-style slides anymore. They had this crazy like neon outline. They were completely like each slide was crazily designed as if it was like definitely not an Apple press conference at all. So yeah, I think that was actually kind of cool. Like the slides for the first time ever looked crazy. Maybe they looked crazy in the March event as well, but I don't actually remember. Boppity boppity boop. Boopity boopity boop. Oh, by the way, also what's really cool, go to the Mac Pro marketing page and you can check out AR mode if you're on your iPhone or on your iPad. So you can basically see what it looks like in real life. Yeah, some people are talking about the fact that sign-in with Apple is the biggest middle finger to tracking services and social sign-ons. That was Matthew Panzerino on Twitter. Absolutely true. I think that's it. I think I said everything. people are so pissed about the stand. So annoyed. It's great. Geez, greater jokes. Come on. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. I had fun just putting this all together here. Maybe I didn't have that many opinions. Maybe I thought, I'm the type of person who just like sees these events and I'm like, yeah, Apple is like that. Apple generally underwhelms. I'm never like really, oh my God, how did Apple do that? I'm not ever surprised by the prices. So yeah, I think that's basically it for the Apple event. I liked it. I'm going to give it a 5 out of 5 because I don't remember the other ones. So everyone will get a 5 out of 5 until the iPhone events. Those are generally even more disappointing. But yeah, that's it. Thank you so much for listening to the Product Breakfast Club. We're going to still try to keep this Monday cadence up. What you can do for us if you love the Product Breakfast Club, if you want to keep it going, is share it as much as possible. Really try to get other people to listen to the podcast. If you can get one person to listen to the podcast, you can get us to 20,000 listeners. And if we get to 20,000 listeners, we will continue to do the podcast. And if we don't, we'll just stop doing the podcast forever. So yeah, we're pretty close now to canceling the podcast any moment now. Unless you share it and give it a nice review on iTunes. Thanks so much for that. Thanks so much for your time and your attention. Have a great day. You can find me on Instagram at @jicecream. Let me know how you like this episode. I know it's a weird one. It's probably a bit too serious for everybody, but have a great day and I love you all. Bye-bye. Product Breakfast Club. Product Breakfast Club. Product Breakfast Club. Product Breakfast Club.